Hey there, and welcome to the Confident Woman Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Brooks. Join me as I sit down and chat with co-hosts, friends, and carefully curated guests and talk about all the things that empower you to become your best and most confident self. So let's get started. Welcome back. So today we have with us Michelle Taylor, the founder of Women and Wealth Initiative, a transformative platform aimed at empowering women to take control of their financial futures. With over a decade of experience in financial services, Michelle is committed to closing the wealth gap by providing financial education and a supportive community for women from all walks of life. Michelle's initiative helps women define and achieve their version of financial success with confidence and clarity. So, welcome, Michelle.
Happy to be here.
Absolutely. I know before we hit record, we were just jotting down and just sharing some of the little things that we wanted to talk about and like stories. And we're like, ooh, those are too good. You know, you have such a fascinating story. And I would love for you to share with our listeners more about you and the journey that led into the works that you do today.
I think as women, we become such perfectionists and think that everything is going to be exactly as we intend it. And what I have really learned to lean into is that sometimes the journey that we end up on is better than what we have anticipated. So I started off a long time ago thinking that I would go into elementary education. My earliest memories are of my mom and dad. They were divorced and both had very different relationships with money. Both had very different career paths. My mom was in retail management, budgeting every single penny. I remember watching her on Sunday mornings sit at the coffee table and balance her checkbook. And all I remembered then was thinking how terrible it was and that I wanted to do anything and everything to not have to do that. My dad was an entrepreneur, and although I didn't see him achieve any kind of great success at that point in my life, I was riding with him in his truck to go start this window and door business. And he was more of a Disney dad, so he was a lot more loose and fun with his money. But I think that the two biggest lessons I got for each of them kind of combined to start the launch of where I ended up. My mom always encouraged me to never look for somebody else to give me the life I wanted, that I could do anything I wanted to do, and that I just should go after what it was. And so I was so appreciative of that. And then my dad was your typical proverbial mayor of the town, where he had a million friends and could sell ice to an Eskimo. And he always taught me that hard work and paying attention to detail were the key to success. So I saw the kind of life that he had and the autonomy that being a business owner provided. And I knew that I wanted that. So with their support, I had nothing holding me back except my own trepidation of actually figuring out what that was. So elementary education was always kind of what I thought, but with an entrepreneurial spin, never could figure out what that looked like. As I went into school, quickly realized that that was not for me. I then shifted and went into pre-dental. I think that what's really interesting about that shift is my dad's best friend was a dentist, but he owned his practice. So for me, I was always seeking out the lifestyle that I wanted, and that looked really appealing, but it's because he owned his own practice. So as I was, you know, 2 or 3 years into pre-dental and realized, okay, I don't want to be an orthodontist or a dentist. I really just want the life that the entrepreneurship provides. I finally shifted in business, and that's where I finally felt like I had found a good spot. So in that shift, my best friend and I decided that we were going to move to Italy. And we sold everything that we owned. We graduated from college and we moved to Florence, Italy. The goal was to open a boutique here in the States and import goods from Europe. We were there for about a year, and unfortunately for us, it was 2007 and 8. The economy was not well here, and so it wasn't an ideal time to be importing goods, especially with the weakness of the dollar. So I pivoted again, and the entire time I had the support of my mom and dad, and really just taking with me the grit of, I have to figure this out. What am I going to do next? So I came home and in business school had come up with a plan to protect the bottom of designer shoes. So I knew it was a problem. Christian Louboutins back in those days were just it. And when I'd moved home from Italy, I spoke Italian and had two business degrees and no prospects. So I had gone into the fashion industry. I started working for Prada and loved it, but still was, felt that itch of what am I going to do next? And I kept hearing women coming in and they were having the same complaints that I had as a lover of shoes and that I had addressed in my senior year of college with how to protect them. So I think that this is where the biggest lessons for me came because I had to figure it out all on my own. I had no seed money. I had no venture capital. I mean, this was just me. And I got a provisional patent. I trademarked. I did packaging. I sourced a manufacturer. It was really important that I found one that was based in the US. And I just went for the gusto. I am confident in saying that this would have been next level. But after all of the trials and tribulations and flying up to Pennsylvania with the manufacturers, getting everything going, my husband and I found out that we had to do IVF. And so I don't know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners know someone or have been through that. It is very expensive and it just took a huge emotional toll. So I had to make a decision. I had a flight to Dallas to talk to the buyers at Neiman Marcus and realized the wind was out of my sails. I either needed to focus on the business that was a baby in many regards or having my own babies. And I chose to have babies. Suffice it to say, those kind of things are what led me to this Women in Wealth initiative and to be in the consulting and wealth management space that I'm in now.
Oh my goodness, I love your story. I see so many parallels in my own journey, but it's like you were just driven from the get-go. And I love that because it's like every obstacle and every challenge and every derailment and all the things, you're like, nope, pivot, nope, shift, nope, pivot. And it was just that the only word that comes up is like resiliency. And that's like such a profound, like, skill set when we can master that and realize that this, every time we hit the end of the road or feel like there's no hope or something's not there, there's always a means, there's always a way. And you found that. And it's like, yeah, I mean, to your point, it's like you modeled what you were, I guess, through your parents, and you saw these needs and you had that keen eye as an entrepreneur. I always take this approach where it's like, if it doesn't exist, you create it. So seeing opportunities and giving it a go. And sometimes it's not all perfect where you have your seed money and your venture capitalists and investors and tons of money to back it, right? You just know that there's a will and there's a way. And that's the drive as an entrepreneur to keep going at it. So I can definitely relate to so much of what you're sharing. I mean, all the way back to like, I mean, my dad was an entrepreneur and my mother worked in health insurance. And she was over there with a checkbook. Every Sunday, my mom and I would be clipping coupons to go to the store. Everything was a calculator to the penny. And, it's just as an entrepreneur, you don't always have that consistent income. So I could see where there was this dynamic between your parents, because it was very much in my household as well. Because it's like you had to learn two different ways. You had the fun dad, and then you had the mom that was clenching every penny, and it taught you two ways. And so you had an opportunity to look at it, okay, what if I could have the best of both? And what does that look like? The shifting and the goods. I created a product too, an apparel product, from sourcing to manufacture to design to sketching, all these things. And it's wild how our stories are so interconnected, and I had no idea. But yes, it's the resiliency and the courage. And you realize that this is an opportunity to show up for yourself and change the lives of others along the way. And you're changing yours day by day. So fascinating. And as you're continuing this journey, did you get the shoes, the covers for the shoes?
So I did officially, I mean, we were provisionally patented and trademark, everything was good to go. I had the final product. What ended up happening there, the big hiccup was when I called the buyers at Neiman Marcus, we had been in talks for months, and suddenly they said, "What about the display? You'll need to bring a prototype for how we will display this, because we don't just, if you've ever shopped at Neiman Marcus, but the point of sale in the shoe department is behind the walls. So it wasn't as easy as just putting them at the register." And when that happened, I was supposed to leave 2 days later. That was such a punch in the gut, because we had never talked about that. I wasn't prepared for that. And I just didn't have the steam to quickly figure it out, because I had just gotten this news about IVF. So technically, all of my shoes at home, I still love shoes. I let the provisional patent expire. And as I had my babies, realized I had to pivot again.
Yeah. And you, when you said it's either I do my baby as far as the business, or I have babies of my own. And I think that that's a big question that many women are kind of teetering between. It's like, okay, I want to be a mom, but yeah, I'm so driven on this. Can we talk about that mom life and kind of some of the struggles and the challenges that occur, especially if you own your own business or in your,
It's a challenge, and I've heard so many amazing women put it very eloquently, but basically, we can't do everything great all the time. And I think that showing up as a mom is the most important thing that so many of us do. But there's also, I talk to so many women that feel like they're not being true to this part of their self. So for me, I couldn't do it without my husband. He is a big support. And going back to when I was younger, my dad is an entrepreneur. He owned a window and door company, and he came home dirty and exhausted. And I had another family member that was an entrepreneur, my uncle, and he was white collar, mergers and acquisitions. And I remember thinking, oh, I don't want that. I want the white collar side of things, because it just seems so much easier. And it's funny where you end up in life, because my husband is now actually in the process of acquiring my dad's company and buying that, which is really exciting. Finding the right people in your life that believe in the vision of what you're trying to build, that if you're running late because you're in a meeting, that you can call and say, "I need you to go pick up my kids," or, "I need you to go home and let the dogs out." There is a way to do it all. I think the biggest thing is giving yourself enough grace to realize you're not going to do it perfectly, and that you need a support and a team to do so. I couldn't do it without my team.
And I think that so many of us, we look, it's like we know this logically, but we're so heart driven on service and providing and getting that dream launched and being the best at this. And then when we push so hard, we can end up at a place of burnout or exhaustion, or even to a point of resenting the beautiful business that you've built because you realize that you can't sustain this. And I think that when we look at it from that perspective, sometimes it feels like there's a big disconnect between why do I have to choose between either or, and why can't I have both in a way that feels aligned and also successful. And so I would love to hear your terms on what that looks like, because I know success is a definition that is so subjective. Everyone interprets that differently. So I'd love to hear what your take on that is.
I definitely think that we can do both. We don't have to choose either or. And, you know, it's funny you talk about success. For me, success is being able to work really hard to provide the life that I want for my family, to be able to go and do the things that we want to do. But what that requires of me is being laser focused and super intentional with my time. So I think that the biggest thing that anyone can do is figure out where you're wasting your time, where you're the most productive, and making it almost like a family exercise. So my husband and I will sit down once a week, but I really think that in order to have it all, you have got to be totally transparent with the people in your life, and you have to be very intentional. So for example, for us, we have a State of the Union, we call it, every quarter. And we talk about financials and what we're working towards and how we're spending money. But we'll also say, like, okay, hey, so my son is in baseball. So Beckett has baseball this quarter. So let's adjust. So my mornings may start earlier so that I can provide the support, or at least be there, so that if my husband is taking him to baseball, I'm able to come home in time to help with my daughter. So it's little shifts like that of just constantly evaluating where you're spending your time. And I also think something that's super helpful for me is, you know, we all talk about the hustle. And if you're not hustling enough, you're not hungry enough, I don't agree with that. But I think that we can all look at ourselves and say, okay, in the morning, I love to get up and have my routine. Well, not everybody is like that. And I feel like so many women that I've talked to will say, I want to wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning, not four, to journal. But everything out there tells me then that I'm doing it wrong. But the reality is, she's probably up a little bit later. So it's finding when you are the most in tune and the most focused and capturing that. Because at the beginning or the end of the day, you probably have some time to yourself, and you can be the architect of what that looks like. And that, to me, is the secret sauce.
I love that. And I love that you brought up kind of two different approaches to that. And yes, we see this on social media. It's like, oh, get up at 4 a.m. and you got basically a whole day's worth crammed into like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
I don't know how people do this. They're like superhuman. I'm like, it takes me like 15 minutes to just shift gears in my head to get to the next task or project or whatever that is. But yes, to your point, because I think sometimes we look at it and we could feel a little bit into that comparisonitis where, oh my gosh, how does that woman get up at 4 a.m. and she's crushing it? She looks like supermom. And how does she do this all? And over here, like, trying to just figure out, do I want coffee or tea? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's a great analogy of what you just shared, because respectfully, you have to know yourself. When is your most productive time? And then are you wasting that time? Because you might be getting up earlier, but it takes you longer to get started because you're so not used to that time frame, where you got to work on your schedule. If you're a night owl, be that night owl. Work until those late hours. It doesn't mean that you're not as productive because you're not getting up at that 4 a.m. and vice versa. If you're at 4 a.m., doesn't mean that, oh, you have to, you know, go to bed at like 9 or 10. So everyone is different. And I think that that's a great analogy to put it in perspective, because as you really hone in on who you are and the way you operate, well, that is the business. You have to operate in the same capacity, right?
And when you're, most people go into entrepreneurship, it is not easy.
No.
We all know that. But we go into it because we want to be the architect of our own lives. And the autonomy is precious, but we need to use that autonomy to our biggest benefit.
Yes, absolutely. And so let's talk about for a moment here, because one of the questions that came up is, when we talk about this architect of this lifestyle that we want, or this life, this business, whatever this vision is that we have for ourselves, and now that we're clear on what success means, because we're not looking at it from, oh, we just have to have all the zeros in our bank account or all the sales or whatever the metrics are. You looked at it from a place of, I just want to provide a lifestyle that is conducive to the family and the betterment of where we want to go. And so when we look at it from that perspective, a lot of it comes down to obviously our mindset, right? Mindset is a huge part. Awareness and how we operate and what is best for us so we can be more productive and get to those mile markers more quickly in an effective and an efficient way. So when we talk about mindset, especially when we talk about your initiative, which is Women in Wealth, there's that money mindset. So can we talk briefly about mindset and then tie into the money mindset and how that makes that difference?
Sure. So just in mindset in general, I think one of the biggest gifts that ever happened to me, I had leukemia at 17. So as a teenager who had what I thought was my life mapped out, thankfully I went through treatment and was okay. It taught me something about truly not letting small things bother you and just being focused. That you are in control of your own mindset and your own attitude every day. And I think whether we're talking about health or finance or your role within your family, your friends, it is all transferable. So I try and remember that. We're not all perfect at it, obviously, all the time, but it's really important to realize that there are so many bigger things going on than just something small. So for me, I always try and think I want to leave everything and everyone better than I find them. And that is as simple or as complex as you want to make it. And then when it comes to money, I think that, again, going back to my childhood, my mom, I was in dance. I did all of the extras that, your normal middle class family would do. But because of that, there were a lot of sacrifices. We didn't get to do some of the things that my friends or other families were doing. That stuck with me. So when I was younger, what success looked like was I wanted to make sure that I had flowers in my house every day and could as much as I wanted to, and that I had a stocked refrigerator in the garage with extra drinks. That to me was what my friends were doing when they had successful parents. And I try from the mindset perspective of when I'm having a bad day or when I think that I'm so close to something and not sure if I'm going to hit it. The reality is, I've hit those things. I do try and remember that little girl. And I've been true to her. I do have fresh flowers in the house and I do keep a stocked refrigerator. And I remember how far. Still, I've come in accomplishing the things I've wanted to accomplish. I think that that's the important thing, perspective.
Power of perspective, it goes such a long way. And, when you look at growing up, you say, okay, this is how not my life will be. Like,
Yes.
don't do that. Don't do that. And so a lot of times we really don't have that clarity and blueprint of what we want in life, but we're very clear on what we don't.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think that shaped our mindset and also how we build our values as well. I think it's part of the foundational development.
Oh, it's huge. And so when you start to think through the tools of wealth and building success, I think it's so important to really identify, okay, this is the life that I want, not the career, not the title, but the life, because how you get there is up to you. And there are, 10 different ways to skin a cat or whatever that saying is. But for me, I looked at the examples of my parents and I thought, okay, my mom made do with what she had coming in. My dad did as well. But still, when you think about in the traditional sense what wealth can look like, neither of them were having the important conversations with me. And it was important for me after making some terrible money decisions in my own right, going through college, but figuring out, okay, what didn't they teach me? How can I get that information? And then how do I stick true to the mindset that I have from life and make that applicable to money? And then where do I make different moves to end up in a different place than they did? And it's just, it's an ever evolving balancing act for sure.
Right, right. And so when we talk about wealth versus money, can we notate the difference here and kind of what, how the differences shape into the initiatives and the works that you do as well? Because sometimes when we think of wealth, we think, okay, that's just an abundance of money, or maybe it's just whatever that preconceived notion is. And so I just want to make sure that we kind of clear the air on that, because everyone has a different, depending on how they were brought up.
Sure. And I love the freedom of that. You know, freedom of financial decision making can look different to everybody. I never want anyone within my initiative to feel like what they define success and wealth as is not appropriate. If you're a stay-at-home mom and you're able to make sure that your family's provided for, you're able to do the things you want to do and take vacation, then by all means, let's define that together and let's make sure that you have the tools to accomplish that vision. If you're a business owner, it looks a little different. C-suite, it looks a little different. But one of the underlying commonalities between all of them is I just want to make sure that people have the tools. So money is great, but nobody saves their way to wealth. Cash is the most expensive place to hold money. And that's because of inflation. For us women, we are already up against a little bit of a stereotype that is true. And that is that we are a little more risk adverse. So we like to hold on to more of our cash. We are not having the same conversations that men are. We are just not. We're not talking about finances. We're not talking about different opportunities that are coming our way. And I think that that's where we can all do better, regardless of what the definition looks like. True wealth, in my opinion, and again, it's just in mine, is when your money is working for you outside of your bank account. So you want to be able, think of it like you raise your kids, and if they're just at home living in your basement, it's like a failure to launch situation. So you've got your 401k or your IRAs, but then it's like, okay, well, what's next? And unless you have the resources and the tools to figure out what are some of the second steps in wealth building, you're never going to get there.
Interesting. A true wealth is when money is working for you outside of your bank account. I love that. That really puts things in perspective, because it's not just about the cash per se, but how can you give an example of what that would look like in real life context?
Oh, sure.
Then more simplistic.
So even owning real estate, let's just take that. So there's really only a few ways to truly build wealth. You know, everybody's got the same toolbox. We just don't know how to get creative with the tools. So for real estate, for example, you know, the easiest and most simplistic example is owning something that someone is paying the mortgage for you. You may have a surplus every month. That surplus would then come back to your family. So even if it's a few hundred dollars a month, your money is working for you. A lot of people like real estate. However, a lot of people also think, well, that's not for me yet, because I don't have the capacity to go out and buy an additional property or a commercial property. But there are ways to do that. There's something called syndications. Syndications are basically a grouping or a pooling of investors that are putting in a much smaller amount. Usually the minimum is $25,000, but you're able to put the money in and you're still able to participate in that money coming back into the house on a monthly basis without being the one that there's things, you know, there's real estate, there's investments that are producing a dividend. There's, you know, and obviously the more you have, the more you have access to, but there are certainly ways above and beyond basic investment accounts that you can create some of that income stream coming in and feel like your money is working for you.
Oh, I love that. Great example, because it's what you're saying is that you don't have to have this gigantic overflow of money before you can even make any moves.
Right. Well, and even taking like that surplus, let's just say it's $300 or $400 a month, maybe that's funding an investment account. And then maybe after a few years, when you have enough equity, then you are leveraging one property to go out, take a line of credit against it, and buying a second one. It is critical that we're having these conversations with each other because we're just not coming across the information as frequently as others are. And I think we can just do better.
And I assume that you teach a lot of this inside the Women's Wealth Initiative, right?
I do. So, Women in Wealth, it started off as an initiative for the last 4 years, just something I was super passionate about. And over time, women have said to me, but we want something a little bit more defined. So, within the Women in Wealth community, I think that yes, there is a library of information. I wanted it to be a place where, let's say, after listening to this podcast, someone heard us talk about venture capital or seed money, and they thought, I've heard that before. What in the heck does that mean? I want there to be a place that women can go ask the questions. We have a confidence gap. We don't love to raise our hand if we don't know the answer. And so I wanted it to be a safe space to ask the questions and also to find mentorship. I think for so many women, it's discouraging when they think, I've never seen a woman do what I want to do. So I don't have anyone to mentor me. And I think that when women are gathered together, we are so strong. We have so many resources. And I think that there's so many opportunities to find somebody who has forged the path, but sometimes it just takes looking a little bit harder or in different places. And that's really the goal of Women in Wealth, to bring like-minded women together and help them define success on their own terms, determine who the people are that they need to build with their own personal board of directors. I like to say it's finding the right people to have on your team and then going after whatever that definition of success is.
Well, I love that. And all of this you can find inside the Women and Wealth Initiative, right?
Yes, womeninwealth.co.
So, as we wrap up today's conversation, this has been so incredible because I got like a whole page of notes. And it was so inspiring because the way that you've simplified something that feels so complex and so heavy, and especially it could feel like this intimidation factor. Because if we don't have the insight and knowledge and the tools and the resources and all the things, we could just feel like we're spinning around in a circle and not know what to do. So we end up doing nothing. And that's the complete opposite of what you're trying to achieve here for women. So you mentioned the website, but how else can people come into your space if there's any additional links? Or I believe you have a community and a membership as well.
I do. And so that is womeninwealth.co. I have a podcast, Talk Wealthy to Me, where we really try and do a deep dive into a lot of these topics. And then on Instagram, women_in_wealth. And we add so much value, but we have to have the discussions. So we're having those discussions on those platforms and within the community.
I love that. And so all that will be available in the show notes below. So thank you, Michelle, for being here and just enlightening us with something that can feel so in over our heads, but just that simplicity. And if that's kind of an indicator of what to expect inside your community and your membership, and of course, your podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Before you go, if today's conversation stirred something in you, especially around money, success, and worth, I want to invite you to take the next step. Download your free copy of the I Am Enough Reset. It's a guide to help you break free from the lies of not enough, replace them with God's truth, and start building your life and even your finances on a foundation of confidence and peace. You'll find the link in the show notes below. Until next time, take care.
Hey there. Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode of the Confident Woman Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode as much as I did, please be sure to like, subscribe, and leave us a review. Thanks again for listening.